We're back with Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast, or should I say Everyone Gets a Trophy marathon. I feel like we've been recording a lot of podcasts, and Ian has been putting in yeoman's work, staying up really late in Michigan and Ypsilanti, and being kind enough to accommodate me because I'm on mountain time. So when we're finishing these up, a lot of the times it's 12:30 or 1 o'clock Ian's time, but these are the only times we're going to record them because we need our kids to be in bed and not bothering us.
Are you worried that recent events have derailed your retirement plans? It certainly made us reassess all aspects of ours, and that's why we're proud to offer our listeners a chance to work with David McClellan, a fiduciary financial advisor from Forum Financial. David's practice specializes in financial life coaching and retirement planning, and right now he's offering free consultations for our listeners if you mention the podcast. As part of this consultation, David can help you understand your financial freedom number and what that means to you in assessing your future financial plans. If you want to build wealth, if you want to make optimal decisions within your financial life, David is someone you need to talk to. You can reach him at 312-933-8823. Once again, that's David McClellan at 312-933-8823. He's located in Austin, Texas, but he's got a nationwide clientele. Do yourself a favor and get some great financial advice for free and see if you might want to work with Mr. McClellan. I think you'll be happy with your phone call.
All right. Ian, are you ready to eat your vegetables today?
I'm ready.
What are your favorite vegetables?
Well, my wife usually roasts them these days with oil and salt.
That helps a lot. Yeah.
It helps. Oh, yes.
So are we talking cauliflower, broccoli? What are we doing?
Earlier tonight, we did sprouts and cauliflower and she always does sweet potatoes. And then an actual salad, and then I grilled some chicken. So it was pretty healthy.
Oh, man. Yeah,
of course, I ate some junk food afterwards.
I would put forward that there is no greater divergence in taste of a food than Brussels sprouts, whether they're roasted with a bunch of seasoning versus just boiled Brussels sprouts, which is horrendous.
I haven't even had that. I don't even.
Don't do it. Just continue to like roast them in a pan and put a bunch of garlic and aioli and stuff on it, and you'll be good. Yep. I don't know why I said aioli. Danny Aioli from Do the Right Thing. I don't know. All right. Ian, the reason I asked you about taking your vegetables and eating your vegetables, we're going to talk about special teams. Now, before all of you click stop on your pod, on the pod and say, oh, we're going to talk about special teams, I want to sell you and I want to convince Ian that every time Texas is elite, in fact, when Texas plays for national titles, they will have elite special teams. And part of the reason they're playing for the national title is that they have elite special teams. But part of the reason they have elite special teams is that they're talented enough to play for the national title. So I'm going to talk about that interesting dichotomy.
When you say elite special teams, you don't mean elite specialists. Because you could argue that the two best specialists in Texas football history both played for Texas during one of the worst spells, which would be the punter, Michael Dixon, and
yes,
Justin Tucker.
The great Justin Tucker. That is a very good point, Ian. I do mean the totality of special teams. But also, by the way, Texas in its two best years of special teams as a unit also had good specialist play. So that's also a part of it. So I'll cover that and talk about it a little bit. I want to save that so I can fully deliver the hammer of my point about special teams. But the reason I'm bringing this up and the reason I wanted to do a special breakout for this is Ian and I have been reviewing all the positions. I believe we have just one more position group, standard position group to release. That's going to be the offensive line. And then we're going to do special teams, and then we're into the season. So the reason I want to talk about this, the reason it's really piqued my interest is I think Texas has the potential to have elite special teams in 2023. And I think those elite special teams can not only be a differentiator in very lofty ambitions for this team, but also I think it creates a very solid floor for Texas, which I don't want to say guarantees, but makes very likely a berth in the Big 12 title game. Mm. So, Ian, how do you think Texas special teams ranked last year in aggregate?
Well, I feel like those rankings usually do get weighted by the specialist play.
They do indeed.
It's sort of like if you have a good quarterback, or I'd really argue a dominant wide receiver, then your offense is going to score high, whatever the line does, right? So because neither the punter nor the place kicker were extraordinary, I'm going to guess. What by what metric?
Just,
Adjusted stats or something?
you could do dumb counting statistics, or you could do advanced metrics. You could just use your subjective eye.
I bet they were like 30s in like an adjusted metric, like 30th nationally, 30 to 40.
Interestingly, yours is the common man's opinion in this regard. That is actually the common perception amongst Texas about Texas special teams. In fact, Texas special teams were borderline elite last year.
Really?
Depending on the metrics you use, they were just outside of the top 10 in FRIMO Efficiency Index, FEI. I believe they were in the top 10. I believe they're number six. S&P just outside. And then if you look at just some eyeball counting statistics, as they call it, like simplistic statistics, they were actually pretty good special teams. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that the Texas special teams maybe didn't create a lot of plays, because you always think of special teams associated with like flashy plays, punt returns, kick returns. What they actually did was negate the other team's special teams. That's what Texas was really good at, and that's half the battle in special teams. So I'll give you a quick example. With respect to kickoff coverage, both punt and kickoff coverage, Texas was elite. Like in the top five in the country. So Texas averaged 25.2 yards per return whenever Keelan Robinson was returning it. 25.2 is good. You could just do the math on that for obvious reasons. He had a long of 52. He never broke one, but he did get out one past midfield, which is very helpful. Texas opponents averaged 17.2 yards per return, season long of 34. It's actually pathetic. I mean, from their perspective, that's great from the Texas perspective. So Texas was demonic on kickoff coverage. Punt coverage, very comparable. I won't bore you with all the statistics. Also, you mentioned Bert Auburn and Danny Trejo. You are correct about Danny Trejo not being a particularly great punter. Bert Auburn was actually very good.
Sideshow Bert.
Sideshow Bert was 21 of 26. 7 of 9 on kicks between 40 and 49 yards. 80.8% accuracy. That's good for fourth in Texas history.
Wow.
And that's darn good. So that's
That's the
top.
German for D, Bart D.
Yes. So Sideshow Burt returns. Will Stone returns.
Yeah.
His second, right? And so Will Stone's going to continue to be a kickoff specialist. One thing about Will Stone and the kickoffs, a lot of people always say, just kick it in the end zone. This is so stupid. Well, so two things. Ian's not shaking his head saying, no, not always. And he's exactly right. So here's the basic calculus. If they have a really dangerous kick returner and they're good at blocking for kick returns, try to kick it out of the end zone. You'll put it on the 25-yard line every time. If the other team is not particularly great or adept in the return game, and you have a skilled kicker, you want to kick it off, particularly if you're good at kickoff coverage, as Texas is, because more likely than not, that team is going to start with the ball somewhere between the 15 and 21-yard line. And you kind of shrug and go, oh, whatever. Well, if that happens 5 or 6 times over the course of a game, you just picked up 40 yards. So that's the way to think about it. And it's the hidden yards of special teams. You know, I started talking about that 25 years ago, the hidden yards. And it's one of these things that allows certain teams, particularly defensive-oriented teams, or just sometimes when your offense doesn't show up, you can win a game where you're looking at the box score and you're like, how did they win this game? And then you look at special teams and you add up kick return yardage and punt return yardage and all that. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, there's a 120-yard differential here. That explains how Texas was able to pull it out. So that's kind of what I want to talk about, because not only was Texas pretty good on special teams last year at negating the other team's special teams, I think Texas has the potential this year to not only negate the other team's special teams, but actually be proactive with our special teams and actually score, be offensive with our special teams. So any thoughts, Ian?
Well, not only that, but I listened to Jeff Banks' press conference at the beginning of fall camp, and he noted that Will Stone has improved his, I think, his overall kicking power.
Yep.
He can cough and corner it a little better and not just have to try to kick it out the back or something. I don't remember the specifics, but it was something to the effect of Stone is a better kickoff guy now. And then I thought, based on a few raw counting stats, that the new punter, is it Ryan Sanborn or Jack Sanborn?
Ryan Sanborn.
Jack is a Wisconsin linebacker. Ryan Sanborn, his stats are very similar to the machete, Danny Trejo's. But as you disabuse me of that notion with some stats that maybe you would like to go ahead and spit out, since you were the one who told me.
Yeah, no, it's actually really interesting, Ian. So Ryan Sanborn, the transfer from Stanford, is a four-year starter there for the Cardinal. And if you look, he averages the same punting average as Danny Trejo, machete.
So he's
kind of shrug. Yeah, you're the same guy. Well, here's the difference. Sanborn is the only punter in FBS to go 20 for 20 on attempts to pin opponents inside their 20-yard line. And not a single one of his 50 punting attempts went for a touchback. So when you have that punter suddenly punting on 4th and 11 at midfield is not so unpalatable and irritating, because you have a real chance of that opponent offense starting on the 5-yard line. Because the worst thing in the world, if you're 4th and 11 on the 50 and you punt and it rolls into the end zone and suddenly your punter, oh, he just had a 50-yard kick. Well, no. So what happens now is the opponent gets it in favorable field position. And if you run the numbers, you actually would have been better going for it on 4th and 11, even with the risk of giving them the ball at the 50. So this is actually, it's not a reason to punt, by the way, 4th and 5 on the opponent 45. I hope Steve doesn't take it that way. But what it does mean is when you have the ability to consistently pin the opponent inside their 20, when you do decide to punt, that is a huge advantage. And there are absolutely hidden yards associated with that that can affect game outcomes.
Yeah. Just to go over a few, there's a lot of potential for disaster when a team is backed up to their own 20.
Yes.
Turnovers can turn into defensive touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
The offense necessarily gets more conservative because they don't want that. And then they often end up just punting it to you at midfield. Then you have amazing field position.
Can I stop you right there? When they have to punt and you're at midfield, what do they have to do in their punt?
Okay, that was going to be my next point, Paul.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I apologize.
punting from your own end zone is fraught with peril.
It's called Max Protect. And what it means is you are less likely to put out your gunners on either sideline and have them just take off, because you need to bring them in and you need to make sure that the punter can get the ball. He's also going to kick it quicker. Like right when he gets it, he's going to kick it. So you're more likely to shank it. And if you're not, and if Texas, which who has an established history of punt block, right? If you set up punt return, that's why you often end up with these punt returns where the guy fields it on the 50 and you don't see a defender within 10 yards of him. And they start to get moving and all of a sudden you're like, oh no, these guys are screwed. And so these are these little additive aspects of football that you don't think that Ryan Sanborn pinning him on the five was that big of a deal in the big picture, but all of a sudden things start to snowball, and it's the thing that allows you to have a punt return touchdown that might swing the game.
Can I just say something really quick about a man named Bill Snyder?
Yes, sir. You may. You know I like the Purple Wizard.
The Purple Wizard used to do three things at Kansas State every year that helped them win like that on the margins. They ran the quarterback a ton.
Yes.
To get an extra guy in the run game. They actually played really simple bend, don't break defense for the most part.
Is there later Snyder did that. Snyder, when he had some monsters, was blitz all day.
A second era Snyder, yeah.
Yes, second era Snyder. Very good.
Just let's let them screw up.
Yep.
And then finally, always, always, always great special teams.
Yes, phenomenal special teams. I still have nightmares about David Allen.
Jordy Nelson for me.
Jordy Nelson, David Allen. These are guys. I mean, I think David Allen brought back 4 punts one year, if I recall correctly.
What was that?
David Allen?
Yeah.
Their punt returner.
No, when was that?
Oh, mid-2000s. Early 2000s, maybe.
Oh, that's right.
I know he brought back at least 1 or 2 against Texas.
Like L. Roberson, one of those teams?
Yeah, that era, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jordy Nelson was a dude as well. But yes, Kansas State was devastating. And what's crazy is people would say, oh, David Allen's an amazing punt returner. And you're like, not really. That set up the way they set up the return, basically any guy who runs a 4-5 was going to score. Just like they were that good in their special teams.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that was Frank Beamer, right? That was also how he won so many games at Virginia Tech, right? This that mega emphasis on special teams, just saving them.
Michael Vick did everything.
That's right, Michael Vick did it all. The funny thing is you know, he was a pretty inconsistent college quarterback. People forget that, but
he also didn't run as much in college as you think.
No, not at all. That was really pre-running quarterback era. That, you know, it was not a part of the, you know. I think he rushed for 600 yards or something one year. Like, you know, it's like Colt McCoy.
We won't do this. We won't do this to our listeners, but
we're tangenting.
If we read back his rushing stats, they would read like a list of crimes committed by ISIS. Yeah. They ran him how many times?
4 times. Interesting. Yeah.
Who's in prison?
Yeah. It's true. Hey, we talked about great coaching. One underreported aspect related to special teams that we talk about, Matt Campbell is this amazing coach. No, he just had bad luck and he overstayed his welcome. Well, Iowa State has been 6-12 in Big 12 play over the last 2 years. In no small part because of this, Ian. Guess what they are ranked in special teams last year?
See, Stats of War goes on about this all the time, and he's right. Yeah. So I'm primed. I'm primed for this. So I'm going to overshoot, but I'm going to say like 90th.
Wrong. You did not overshoot. You undershot. 128th. So do you think going 4-8 and losing, what, 5 games by a touchdown or less, you think ranking 128th in special teams affected some of those outcomes? And by the way, I watched the Kansas game where their place kicker missed 3 field goals. I know it affected that game when you lose by 3. And by the way, this was not a one-year aberration. 2021?
I've watched them blow multiple games with special teams.
2021, they were ranked 101st. So Matt Campbell gets a lot of credit as a coach, but special teams has been an area of neglect, and it's hurt his team in the margins repeatedly for a coach who loves to win in the margins. And so that brings me to a broader reason that's going to dovetail with why special teams are so important and why they're so heavily correlated to Texas elite football. Okay.
Exact same
but
page.
Before I do that, I want to talk about an elite mortgage guy in the state of Texas. And he is special in the best possible way. His name is Gabe Winslow. You can reach him at 832-557-1095, or you go to mortgagesbygabe.com. Let him know that Ian and Paul sent you, and he will take care of you. Here's the cool thing about Gabe. He legitimately is just a great guy, aside from a great Longhorn. I have had multiple people, Ian, write me or private message me on Inside Texas saying, hey, I called Gabe, and I ran a deal by him, and Gabe blessed the deal and said, hey, that's actually about as good as you can do. I would just go with that deal. Or they've reached out to Gabe, and Gabe's actually said, hey, I do want to do your refi. Now's actually not the best time. Why don't you call me again in 3 months? If you know any mortgage guys who turn down money on a refi, please let me know, because there's one name that fits on the index card that I know, and it's Gabe Winslow. You want to find out what elite ability and integrity means? Call Gabe, 832-557-1095. I've also extolled the virtues of our friend David McClellan. He's an elite financial advisor for Forum Financial. You're going to find his information at the beginning of this podcast in a pre-recorded message. I don't like to freestyle with Mr. McClellan because he's subject to financial laws and ethical stuff. And I get a little free and easy sometimes. I could do that with Gabe and Laura, but I don't want to do that with David because what he does is pretty serious. And he has this legitimate fiduciary obligation to everyone. So if you want a half-hour consultation to get your financial house in order, give David a call. Really, really sharp guy. And you'll find that out very quickly if you pick up the phone and call him. So Ian, I kind of teased everyone with what I was going to talk about and why special teams are so important, because one, they can impact games, but two, what do great special teams tell you about your football team? Okay. One, I posit that they tell you something about your team's speed.
Yeah, I think that's a decent rule of thumb. The aforementioned Kansas State Wildcats would put a little bit of a damper in that theory.
So I'm going to push back on that. So first of all, the most elite Kansas State special teams were Snyder era one, where they had lots of elite speed. Their special teams, if you'll remember era two, part of their prevent was what? Undersized linebackers, undersized players in general. I thought those K-State teams actually ran pretty well. What they lacked typically was size. Now, you're just thinking of like some offensive players or them playing smash mouth and that kind of stuff. I'm talking about your team, not how you choose to run, you know, power football between the tackles.
I don't know.
No, not sold? All right.
I think that one advantage that they had is that you do need speed at a few spots in special teams.
Yes.
But you also have a lot of other positions where it really pays to have a ton of fundamentally sound, versatile, mid-sized football players, like linebackers, yes, tight ends, and fullbacks.
That's kind of what I was driving at. So okay. Ahead, the other part that I think is this, it's a wonderful broad measure of team aggression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah. Yeah. Aggression and footballerness.
Yeah. And this is kind of part of the critique of Matt Campbell, attention to detail.
Yeah.
You can roll out reasonable special teams with not much practice time if you have good specialists, right? To have elite special teams, you have to have some attention to detail. And you've got to have some pretty heady players, as Ian said, who have footballerness. They need to know how to take the ball off the punter's foot and not just dive into his legs like a moron, right?
Yeah. And also your tight end that handles punt protection, that like is willing to put in the time to know the other team's pump blocking scheme and where your own protection is weak and what to look out for. Like attention to detail from your players, right?
Absolutely, 100%. Not just the coaching staff; it's the attention to detail from the players. I'm glad you made that differential, because I don't just mean the coaches emphasizing it, which is important. I mean the players have to care. Another part of this, and this is something that Jeff Banks does to his credit, you have to have starters on your special teams. In fact, you need to have some guys who might even be stars, because it demonstrates the seriousness and importance of special teams to the other players. One of our best kickoff coverage guys last year,
Roshan,
plays with the Chicago Bears right now. And you know what? He's a running back. He doesn't want to risk it. Oh, I don't need to expose. No. That's not Roshan Johnson's attitude, and sure as hell isn't our coaching staff's attitude. It's Roshan can run. He's super aggressive, and he's mean. You're on kickoff coverage, son. And Roshan salutes and says, sounds good. Can't wait to light someone up.
We reported at one point that the staff actually considered Roshan Johnson for middle linebacker, which I tried to will into happening.
I know you did.
Like the offseason after 2021. I almost did it.
Almost wished it into existence. The Secret. It's such an important book, Ian. Here's another thing about special teams. It tells you something about your young talent. Texas, in no small part am I doing this podcast because I think the 2023 recruiting class has a special group of defensive backs and a couple of guys who might be special team size. I'm talking about Billy Walton's. I'm talking about linebackers like Samaje Burrell. Anthony Hill, I'd be interested to see if we use him on special teams. I imagine he would be very good at kick coverage if he wanted to do it. I think it tells you a little something about the health and attitude of the young players coming up in your program.
Yeah, no doubt. You know who used to be just a demon in special teams? Were the Les Miles LSU Tigers.
Yeah.
And it was partly because, I mean, they emphasized it because Les Miles was old school that way.
And it helps to be DBU.
And then they had just loads of speed, guys with footballerness.
Yeah.
And depth of both. And so they maximized it.
And I've watched LSU for a long time.
Yeah.
One criticism you can make of certain LSU teams is they're pretty dumb. The criticism you can never make of LSU teams is, oh, they lack aggression.
Right.
Right. That's not really something you say about LSU. So those are kind of the things that I think you can look to as leading indicators of improving special teams. I like where Texas checks in every one of these boxes. And then finally, I want to make the case to you, Ian, and I hope the good people listening, that the most elite Texas teams that in recent memory had the most elite special teams. And I don't think that's a coincidence. So
before you do that.
Okay.
And give the people what they want.
Yep. Let's give them what they don't want.
Let's give them what they don't want. Why does Iowa State suck at special teams?
So I think there's three reasons. I think one's practical. They fired their special teams coach and now they have a new one. I don't think they were teaching them well.
I don't think it was an emphasis, point of emphasis.
I don't think it was a point of emphasis. And by the way, Matt Campbell can look in a mirror on that one. You can't just put it off on a coordinator, right? Point two, having field goal kickers who kick field goals can cover a lot of warts. And Iowa State has not had that. Again, look in the mirror. It's your job to go get a kicker. I also think Iowa State has had a drop-off in team speed.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah.
And I think it's showing up on the field. What do you think? Do you have another one?
Well, I have this suspicion. I think those are all right. And I have this suspicion that Campbell would rather use that practice time on their offense and defense, which are generally very well coached, very attentive to detail, especially on defense. And yeah, I think he's from a smaller conference, and he's like, we're going to squeeze value in our practices from having, you know, that much more discipline on offensive defense, or that much more complexity, or whatever. And then he squeezed value out of those at the expense of special teams. What do you think? Are you buying it?
I am buying it.
Almost deep in thought right now.
No, I am buying it. I also just enabled my headset, so the audio for this is going to be a disaster. Yeah, sorry, guys. Awesome job. You want to start over, Ian?
No, not really.
That would be a no. All right. Hopefully it's fine. Sorry, guys. I think you just nailed it. I think you're exactly right. I do think that's hilarious, though, given how vanilla Matt Campbell's offense has been the last couple of years.
Well, the last couple of years. For a minute there, like with Purdy.
Yeah, they got to page two on the playbook.
They were pretty before Breece Hall really got going. They were pretty dependent on like pure NFL style dropback passing.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of that was enabled by Purdy being able to protect himself, because the line didn't protect him that well. But and they were very clever too with motions, because they were always playing all these tight ends, right? And so they're always moving those guys around and whatnot. But
yeah, I could see that. But yeah, you've seen as he's gotten more vanilla, his special teams have actually gotten worse. So
yeah, the roster. I think you're right. The roster.
I think there's roster speed. I think there's a lot going on there, and you know, this was the year to turn it around for them in some regards, because they'd gotten very stale in many regards. Like whatever Heacock's doing, just leave him alone. They'd gotten stale everywhere else, and they did this big turnover on their staff, and then they had the gambling thing. So
they also, I was laughing about this, and I got some pushback from Cyclone fans, but their response was basically, you're an idiot. But it was like, they fired their coordinator, right? And then they promoted their top recruiter to offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, they don't have players.
Yeah.
Where's the next Breece Hall? Where's the next Charlie Kolar? Where's the next Brock Purdy?
Yeah.
Like, it's his fault as much as the other guy, if not more so.
I agree.
I don't know the dynamics there. Maybe it'll pan out, but
it's not going to pan out. This is the part where the narrator goes, it did not pan out. And then it shows highlights of Iowa State going 3-9 in 2023.
Yeah. Well, JJ Cole could be good.
So. All right, dude, we're off on the Iowa State tangent. All right, we're done. You can't talk about Iowa State anymore. Good Lord.
All right. Hit us with your historical facts about Texas special teams.
I'm going to start with 2009, since that was the most recent time that Texas played for a national title and had an elite football team. I think everyone will agree to that as a reasonable premise. That 2009 Texas football team, I understand people combine all of an era of a player or an offense into sort of one jumble, and they think that the 2009 Texas offense was effective. That 2009 Texas offense had big problems, and they really struggled when they played great defenses. Point in case, OU, Nebraska. And I was at the Nebraska title game, and it was tough to watch. So what people do remember, I'm sure, about 2009 is an elite defense led by Will Muschamp. But what they also forget is one of the most elite special teams units in aggregate in not Texas history, college football history. Here's why, Ian. They scored four times in the punt game. Jordan Shipley brought back two. They also had two blocks for touchdowns. Four touchdowns created in the punt game. Three touchdowns in the kickoff return game. DJ Monroe brought back two Marquise Goodwin brought back another. The 2009 Texas Longhorns scored 7 freaking touchdowns just in the return games. By the way, Longhorn opponents did zilch in their return games. Hunter Lawrence, you mentioned the specialist, right?
He's good. I remember that.
24 of 27.
Yeah.
That's real good. By the way, you know what he was from between 40 to 49 yards, which is sort of the litmus hallmark of a good field goal kicker?
9 for 9.
10 of 11.
I think one of those was the one to win the Big 12 championship on Nebraska.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And
I don't think that was a chip shot, right?
No, it was not a chip shot. And by the way, 3 for 3 against OU in Dallas in a game Texas won 16 to 13 by the skin of their freaking teeth because the Texas offense got manhandled. So I also, beyond just the big stats, I want to talk about a game that I think people remember for the famous Sergio Kindle, Taylor Potts destruction. That game, Ian, was nip and tuck. People forget that. Texas won that game 34-24 in Austin against Tech. What people forget is that Taylor Potts threw for 420 freaking yards in that game.
Yeah.
And that game was turned in the late third quarter by Jordan Shipley bringing back a 46-yard punt for a touchdown in exactly the scenario you and I just described at the beginning of the podcast. Texas pinned Texas Tech deep. Texas Tech got a little conservative, believe it or not, pinned deep. They had to punt from their end zone. They put in max protect. Shipley catches a clean ball. Touchdown. Turn the game. Okay?
Is that where he almost ran into Bevo's horns?
I don't remember, actually. That's a great memory if that's how it went down. I know you know what you're talking about. I don't remember if that was that one or if it was a catch or whatever. Ian's searching it right now. I've lost Ian's focus. All right. Are you compelled by my argument for 2009 that special teams was effectively very crucial in the Longhorns playing for the national title?
I was sold on like 7 return touchdowns or whatever.
Yeah. That'll help your team if you score 7 non-offensive touchdowns just on special teams.
Insane.
Okay. Let's talk about 2005. So all we think about is VY and Ramontz Taylor and young Jamal Charles and, you know, an incredible offensive line, great defense and the elite secondary and, you know, Rod Wright, all these guys, right? You remember Brian Robinson, all the talent. What Texas fans forget is that team until 2009 was about the best special teams of the Mack Brown era, 2005 Texas. So, punt returns. Again, Texas scores 4 touchdowns in the punt game. 2 returns for touchdowns by Aaron Ross. 2 blocks by a guy named Sed Griffin, a young kid named Cedric Griffin, and Brandon Foster. Both have punt blocks for touchdowns. 4 touchdowns scored. Kickoff returns. Believe it or not, even though Ramontz Taylor was our number one kickoff returner, he didn't go distance on a kickoff return, which is surprising given Ramontz Taylor's gifts. However, do you know what he averaged per kick return?
37.
No, that would be incredible. In fact, he would have had to bring a couple back. But
I don't know what those stats usually look like.
Well, that was a pathetic guess. I'm embarrassed for you. All right. He averaged 29.4 yards per kick return, which is outstanding.
Okay.
If you average over 25, you're doing a good job.
Because you don't get it in the end zone very often.
You don't get in the end zone very often, but there's a massive advantage to Ramontz Taylor bringing it out to the 39-yard line, and Vince Young has 61 yards. You know, he has 11 yards to get to midfield, right? He's one zone read away from midfield, and all of a sudden, Texas and 2005 Texas is in your territory. That's a lot of pressure on your defense. Yep. So this 2005 Texas group, if not for 2009, would have been the most elite special teams group of the Mack Brown era. but it's number two. Is it coincidence, Ian Boyd? I put it to you, sir. Is it a coincidence that the two most elite special teams units of the 2000s, when Texas was at their peak, are when Texas played for the national title twice and won one of them?
Yes.
And should have won the other, by the way. Because that was not true Alabama. That was not Nick Saban classic Alabama we played in 2009. It was only halfway there. What could have been? By the way, the kicker in 2005, kind of a clutch late addition that we were really concerned about, David Pino.
Yeah, Pino.
He was 6 of 6 from 40 to 49. He was 14 of 18 overall. Here's what's crucial about that stat. He only attempted 18 field goals because Texas just scored touchdowns every drive, right?
Is he the guy that that would kick the snow field goal in 2006 in Nebraska?
I think it was him, and he was a walk-on, wasn't he?
I think so.
I can't remember this, man. I'm gonna someone's screaming in the podcast right now.
It was Dusty Mangum in 2004, and then it was like one of the very few question marks for 2005 was who kicks field goals now that Dusty Mangum's gone.
It was David Pino.
Yeah. Yeah, I watched that game at a CC's Pizza in Austin.
There you go. Wow. I guess Pizza Hut wasn't available.
You know what else, sir?
Sir, this is a Wendy's.
Do you know what else my amazing memory is right about? That was the play where Shipley almost ran into Devo's horns.
That's awesome.
Just looked it up.
I miss Jordan Shipley.
Yeah, he was very good.
You know, it's funny. I was reading on the boards because people forget so quickly, right? That just how good people were. And so, you know, I like to sort of do rankings of players in UT history, even though it's ultimately fruitless, right? Every era is different. But people were talking about how good the 2023 Texas Longhorn receiver corps is. And I was like, absolutely. And it sort of came up apropos of nothing of like, you know, yeah, I mean, these guys are way better than Shipley and Quan Cosby. In fact, you know, Shipley would struggle to start. And I was like, Shipley would be our number one receiver, guys. Like, relax. It's how quickly we forget.
Yeah, go tell them to go look up the
every game.
How about when Shipley almost beat Alabama?
By himself.
I am. Well, yeah. I mean, on offense, yeah.
With Garrett Gilbert. Oh, my
gosh. Every single play, if you go back and watch that film, every single play that Alabama blitzed and thus didn't have two high safeties, Shipley was wide open.
Yeah.
And was either scoring or being missed.
Yeah.
And you can, and they find it on the live telecast. They show it over and over again. Here's Shipley running wide open because they cannot cover him one-on-one with a single defensive back on their entire team.
Yeah. That's why a healthy Colt McCoy would have led to a different result and about 200 yards receiving for Mr. Shipley. He ended up with like 140 as it was. So, all right. Well, another tangent. We're not capable of not tangenting, Ian, but these were actually good tangents. And some of them actually tied back to my original point, which is I jokingly said special teams is like eating your vegetables. Sometimes there's a reason you should eat your vegetables. They're good for you and they're good for your football team. And it is not a coincidence that 2005 and 2009 Texas had elite special teams. Not only did those special teams propel those teams forward, but the dichotomy is that the talent of those teams was proven by how good the special teams were, if that makes sense. So if you see the University of Texas in 2023 playing really well on special teams and changing games and changing outcomes and making material impacts on games early in the season, that is a good bellwether, not only for the health of the roster and game outcomes, but it might suggest that if the other elements come together, offense, defense, this could be a really good team. And I think it's important to kind of look at that in totality. Now, I will address one thing, and this is not to undermine all the points I just made. A lot of people will say, well, special teams are a third of the game. You know, it's just like offense, defense, special teams. They're not. They're not a third of the game. Offense is more important. Defense is more important. But if you think special teams are 20% of the game, that's quite a bit. That's quite a, you know, 15% of the game. That's quite a bit of the game. So, you know, I just think that it's important to sort of talk about it because it does have material impacts on game outcomes.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a disproportionate chance for a game-changing big play on special teams. But there's only, you know, a handful of special teams plays in a game. But it just so happens that a lot of them, it's like one of the fastest players in the field gets the ball in space. And you have to
that point, I didn't deliver the full coup de grace on the 2009 team, and Ian actually knew it when I mentioned it to him before the podcast. Texas is cruising in 2005, crushing everyone in the Big 12. And then go to College Station, or actually,
yeah,
that was a 2009, right?
2005.
Was it 2005?
Yeah. Remember Vince Young kind of pouting on the bench because he knew he'd blown the Heisman?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right. So it's a very close game. And, oh, so, you know, I'm thinking of something different. Actually, the Colt McCoy A&M game where it was a shootout.
Oh, really?
49-39. And Texas is up 42-39 and kind of shaky. And Aggies kick off and Marquise Goodwin houses it for a 96-yard kickoff. And it's the final score is 49-39. Texas holds on. So that's what I was thinking of 2009.
The same was true in 2005 because they were, I don't even know if they were winning or not, but it was very shaky.
Yeah.
One of the Griffins blocked a punt and I,
that's right.
It might have returned it for a touchdown.
I think that was,
it may have been one of the Griffins blocked it and the other returned it or something. I can't remember the specifics, but
I think that was Cedric Griffin.
It was crucial.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Well, there you go. So further reinforcing my point. Thank you, Ian. So what do we think? I mean, do you think Texas has the capability of elite special teams in 2023? Do you see a weakness in our special teams? What do they need to go from being like good to game impacting?
No, they seem very sturdy. I mean, they don't have Michael Dixon and they don't have Justin Tucker.
No.
But Sideshow Bird is quite good.
Yep.
And hopefully they don't, I mean, Michael Dixon, you really don't need Michael Dixon unless you aren't that good at offense. I mean, like one of his greatest strengths is turning a crappy drive into positive field position, right?
Mm-hmm.
And but that would help this team, but that would be, it would be very marginal to this team if this offense is what we think it is compared to what it was for 2017, which had no offense at all.
In a way, I think that's a good point because Sanborn may be the better fit with his skill set in that this team is more likely.
I'm not going to say anyone's better than the punter, but
no. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying he might be a more appropriate fit in that this Texas offense, which we think will be pretty good, it's not going to be caught back on its own 10 because it went three plays, negative 10 yards, right? It's more that they're going to stall out on the 45-yard line because someone dropped a ball on 3rd and 6. And then you punt it and you get the opponent pinned and you start to play some field position games so that when you get the ball back, it's around your 40 again. And then you got a short field and you kind of feel, you know, at the 40-yard line, you can call any play you feel like.
Yep. You lost me a little bit with all that punting back and forth. I'm sure it's important.
I'm channeling DKR here where you're like quick kicking on third down back, which is what they used to do back in the 1950s and early 60s, which is hilarious. So anything else? I think beyond the punt block, I think we need to start scoring in the return games. I think that would be the sort of thing that would elevate to 2005, 2009 levels.
Yeah, specifically in like in Tuscaloosa or whatever game Texas might be having some trouble.
Yeah, it'd be nice to bring back a punt 70 yards.
A Keelan Robinson score in a return game on Rice would be a fun start to the year, but whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Like you said, the 2005 and 2009 teams scored on special teams in moments that super duper mattered.
Yes. Would you say that scoring against Rice on special teams is just empty calories?
I'm not going to. One, I will bring up one more so that people don't get mad.
Or more importantly, bring up one more so they don't end on that terrible joke. Thank you.
I was there in 2008 in the Cotton Bowl when the game changed on Jordan Shipley's. I think Texas would have fought their way back in that game because OU, some secrets of that game. OU, this is good. We'll lather it up for our OU pod that we'll record after this.
That's right.
When OU ran out of their script, when their script ran out in that game, their offense dried up. When Texas started throwing to Shipley as a flex tight end, Oklahoma got just totally punked because they had no answer for it. But it was 14-3 when he returned that kick for a touchdown. And in the moment, and in that stadium, it felt like, oh no, this is going to be another one of those games.
Yes.
Where they just put it on Texas and Texas like can't get off the mat. And that kick return made all the difference.
I
think they
100%
fight back.
Agree. It in the game context of the moment, OU's offense was just flying up and down the field. And Texas needed something. It was, yeah, like you said, it was 14-3. You're down double digits. You're thinking, oh no, it's one of these. And then, you know, I will say this, OU, we kind of forget, OU immediately scored on the next drive. So it was 21-10. But at least Texas felt like, okay, this is going to be a fight. Like, you could tell that Texas was bought in. And then, you know, they win 45-35. I mean, in a sort of a classic. That was an amazing game. But yeah, I think you're just reinforcing the point. There's been so many instances of important special teams. And if you're an old timer,
they also
Texas lost a national championship on a special teams play, a fumbled punt return in 1983. Had they just caught the ball, Texas wins the national title.
If I'm not mistaken, 2008 also, either 2008 or 2009, Oklahoma tried a fake punt and Texas made the tackle short of the line to gain.
I don't remember. I know what you're talking about, but I can't remember.
It was 08 or 09.
I feel like it was 09.
It might have been.
I don't know, man.
I think it was 08. I think it was 08.
Okay. All right. Uh-oh. Ian's searching now. All right. Well, Ian, we're not going to sit and wait for the results of your search, because what if I'm wrong?
That would not make for good. Paul,
what's the name of this podcast? What's the alternate title for Everyone Gets a Trophy?
Paul Wins.
Paul Wins. That's right. Ian has been well-trained on my nonsense. Hey, Ian, unless you have anything else to add about special teams, we are going to say goodbye to the good people. And I see him searching intently, trying to find info, but I'm not going to let him do it. So for Ian Boyd, I'm Paul Wadlington, saying hook 'em.
It was 2008.
Interest rates are up and the market is tumultuous. And now more than ever, you need the best darn possible mortgage broker working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow, and you can reach him at 832-557-1095, or you can go to mortgagesbygabe.com. What makes Gabe so unique? Well, he's incredibly bright.
He's a UT grad. He's got a law degree. He's been in the mortgage industry for over 20 years, and he is a true mortgage broker. What does that mean? It means he can shop for the best deal at over 80 different lenders and find you the terms that best suit you. Most mortgage guys you talk to won't reveal that they have exactly one size fits all for you and exactly one conduit to get your loan. If you are in these hyper-competitive markets and you're in these markets that have frankly gotten a lot less friendly to the consumer, you need the best possible person working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow. He has our full endorsement. You can reach him at 832-557-1095.
Do you need a realtor in Central Texas? Of course you do. We all need a realtor in Central Texas, even those of us who live in Dallas or Houston or San Francisco or Denver, Colorado. You need to go to Central Texas anyway. And the reason is Laura Baker is a fantastic realtor. She's great at what she does. She's a member of the elite Andy Allen team for Keller Williams. You can reach her at 512-784-0505. Talk with Laura if you're thinking about putting your house on the market. This is a great time to get market comps. If you're looking to buy in the market, you need all the help you can get. Call Laura, and it's 512-784-0505.